Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 9 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater Program 362 in the series. It is February 16th, 2019. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl, what's up?
How you doing?
I'm good. How was your Valentine's Day, Mr. Romantic?
You know, candy. A little bit of candy.
Candy is always
good. Candy's good.
Good.
I like candy.
Good, I know you do. You're sweet as sugar, Carl.
I like Candy Matson, Detective, but we don't have that tonight. We have My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball and Richard Denning. Then we're going to tune in to Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad from 1952. Then it's The Adventures of Philip Marlowe from 1950. So a great lineup. We'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning, but right now it's time to play our game, Cat's Pride. Is it real or is it ridiculous? Right?
Right.
So who's the star?
Yes, we're going to play it. The celebrity is Glenn Close.
Yeah.
You've heard of her.
I have.
Good. And the prize will be a Lumel Nottis gift certificate.
Fantastic.
Perfect.
What caller would you like?
We're going to go with caller number 6.
Call now, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Play the game live on the air. We'll be right back.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous.
All right, Lisa, let's get ridiculous here.
I was going to do that. We've got Robert on the phone. Hi, Robert.
Yes, good evening, Carl. Good evening, Lisa.
Hey,
hi,
Robert.
How are you?
Great, great. How are you?
Good. We're going to play a little Real Ridiculous. It's Glenn Close. Here we go. Number one, Glenn and her sister own a bookstore in Montana. Is that real or ridiculous?
What does Carl say?
Carl, what do you think?
I think it sounds true. I'm going to say real.
I'll agree.
All right. Well, that's a good idea. That is absolutely real.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh, those batteries are getting a little low in that thing. Number two.
That's my voice. It wasn't the machine.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I was really doing
if
that.
Only. Her film debut was in The Big Chill, and she earned her first Oscar nomination. Is that real or ridiculous, Robert?
Carol.
Carl? She's in The Big Chill, but I don't think that's her first movie role. Is that what you're asking, Lisa?
I said that's her film debut and
no,
her first Oscar nomination.
I don't think
nomination.
So. I would say...
You're saying ridiculous?
Ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It was The World According to Garp. So far, so good.
Yeah.
Yes, it did.
All right.
Number three.
We're doing good, Robert.
Her highest grossing starring role comes from playing Cruella de Vil in 101 Dalmatians. Real or ridiculous?
What do you think?
Oh, you guys
Robert?
Are a good team. So
I go real.
Yeah, wow. I agree. I think that is real. I believe that's real.
That is real. You guys got 3 out of 3. You can't beat that.
We're and good, Rob. We're a good team, buddy. We're like Abbott and Costello.
Yeah.
Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah, well, you also can't beat a Lumel Nottis gift certificate.
Yeah.
That is the best of the best. Lumel Nottis is home of Chicago's very best deep dish pizza, our personal favorite here at WGN Radio Theater. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at lumelnottis.com. Thank you so much. You guys did a great job. Good teamwork.
Yeah. Way to go, Robert. We'll talk to you soon, buddy. All right. He's a big winner. Robert's a big winner. He won. And, you know, I think candy must be brain food, Lisa. I ate a lot of candy for Valentine's.
Yeah, and that's
I got
what happens.
3 straight.
Well, that's okay. There's hour 2 and 3. We'll
that's
see
true.
How well
I could,
that
I
works
could, maybe
for
I'll have
you.
A candy. I'll have a candy dump, right?
Yeah. I don't want to have a candy dump in this office, in this room, please.
Speaking of that, it's a little smelly in the studio. So like a sewer. There's like an egg or sewer smell going on in the studio.
I thought
I'm not
that
sure
was
what.
You, Carl.
No,
no, not
I showered.
You.
I take a shower once a week, whether I need to or not.
Right.
I don't have my. Oh,
all right,
darn,
go take a candy dump.
All right.
Would you?
Well, guess what? It's time now for My Favorite Husband. But before we do that, just a quick reminder, text us in 312-981-7200. We love to get texts from
How
our
do you
listeners.
Text us in. Text
just
us into
text
what?
Just text us. 312-981-7200. All right. My Favorite Husband situation comedy series premiered on radio in 1948. It starred Lucille Ball and Richard Denning as Liz and George Cugat. And then a little later in the series, they changed the last name to Cooper. So in the beginning, it was Liz and George Cugat. The later is Liz and George Cooper. They were a married couple billed as two people who lived together and like it. It was sponsored by Jell-O. George was a banker, and Liz was his happily married, zany housewife wife. And it also made a transition to television, but not with Lucille Ball. It had Joan Caulfield and Barry Nelson. I think you're going to love this. Lisa, this is our favorite radio show,
it's
right?
It's the best.
All right. This is called Liz and George Reminisce. It's from July 1st, 1949, part one of My Favorite Husband.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
Yes, it's the new gay family series starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning, brought to you by the Jell-O family of desserts.
J-E-L-L. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O pudding.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tap. Tapioca pudding. Yes, sorry.
And now transcribed, Lucille Ball with Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper. Two people who live together and like it. And now let's look in on the Coopers. It's evening, and in the living room we find a strange sight. On the floor, completely covering the rug, is a sea of papers, scissors, paste, waste baskets, and snapshots. And in the middle, like a small island, is Liz Cooper with a scrapbook on her lap.
Liz, aren't you through working on that scrapbook? I thought we were going to a movie.
We are. I'll be ready in a minute.
Well, honey, can't you do that later? You know how I hate to come in after the movie has started.
So you miss the first 3 minutes. What's the difference? It's always the same. MGM presents.
Oh, I didn't mean that part.
Ready in just a second, honey. I only have about four more things to paste in our scrapbook.
Well, hurry up.
Well, I am hurrying. Now, what did I do with that? Oh, you're standing on it, dear. Lift your foot.
What's that?
That's a picture of the car we bought last year.
Let's see. Oh, this picture must have been taken before you started driving. It's got four fenders.
Now, George, I couldn't help what happened. All I did was forget to turn and went straight. Would have been all right if we weren't on a dead-end street.
That was such a beautiful car. I miss it. You know, it's still stuck in that house, Liz.
It is? I'll bet they're the only people in town with a new Hudson in the kitchen.
I'll never forget the day I taught you to drive.
Yeah, you're laughing now, but you weren't laughing then.
Well, I'm more mature now. I aged 10 years that day.
Now, I thought I did real well. Remember, you took me out and...
Okay, Liz, there isn't much traffic on this back road. I guess you can start driving now.
All right, here I go. I push the starter button down like this. George, the starter button's broken.
No, it isn't.
Well, why doesn't it start?
Push it in long enough and you'll find out.
But nothing's happened. Ow! Why did it get hot?
Because it's the cigarette lighter.
What a dirty trick. Now, don't tell me. Is this it?
Try it and see.
Okay. Well, it must be broken. That was the radio.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to suggest anything radical, but what do you think that little button that says starter is for?
Oh, I guess I'm excited. Here we go. Hooray, it started.
Congratulations.
Why aren't we going?
You forgot a little thing called putting it in gear.
Oh, that.
No, no, no.
Am I doing something wrong, George?
Throw out the clutch.
What's the matter with it?
Nothing.
Well, then why should I throw it out?
Step on the clutch. Push it in.
Well, why didn't you say so? My goodness, you get so excited.
I'm not excited.
Then what's that white stuff around your mouth?
It's just a little foam. Now you have the clutch out and the motor on. Now shift into low.
Now, wait a minute. Low is up here, isn't it?
No.
Oh, I know. Down here. Up here?
There's only one place left.
Oh, it's here. There. Now what do I do?
Let the clutch out.
Okay.
Oh!
What happened? George, say something.
Wait till I get my head out of the back seat. I think my neck is broken.
This car doesn't work very well.
Start it again. I'll brace myself.
All right. How am I driving, George?
Fine, except for one little thing.
What's that?
You're driving on the wrong side of the road.
Well, what's the difference? There aren't any cars coming.
Oh! As a favor to me and the insurance company, will you please pull over?
Well, I'd be delighted.
Well, go ahead. Here comes a car. No, wait! Stay on this side. He's going around you.
What a reckless driver. Now, he shouldn't have gone up on two wheels like that.
Liz, let's come to a stop.
Well, why should I stop? I'm doing fine. Now, just let me alone.
Look, the motor vehicle department is on this corner, and I thought you wanted to get your license today.
Oh, I do. Do you think I'm ready?
Well, if we wait till you're ready, you'll be too old for a license. Now, come to a stop.
All right. What do I do?
Put your hand out. Signal for a stop.
Okay.
Now shift into neutral.
Okay.
Oh, look out! Liz, you almost hit that tree. Why did you take both hands off the wheel?
You told me to.
I did not.
You did too. You told me to shift with my right hand and signal with my left, and I didn't have any hands left over to steer. What do you think I am, an octopus?
Now, look, honey. Now, just calm down and go in there and take your driver's test.
Well, do you really think I'll pass it?
Sure. You remember everything you did today, don't you?
Yes.
Well, do just the opposite.
All right.
Good luck, dear.
Now, let's see. When you hear a siren, you pull over and let it go by. When you pass a streetcar on the right at 15 miles an hour, I wonder how fast you can pass it on the left.
Yes?
Oh, how do you do? I'd like to get a driver's license, please.
All right. Name, please?
Elizabeth Cooper.
Address?
321 Bundy.
Uh-huh. A race?
Of course not. I don't even have a driver's license.
I think this is going to be one of my bad days. How much do you weigh?
Guess.
285.
Very amusing. 118.
How old are you?
21.
You know, I haven't missed on that one in a long time. It's funny, there are no women drivers in the United States over 21.
May I have my license now?
Not yet. I have some more questions to ask you. Eyes?
Yes, two. They're blue.
Thank you.
And red.
What?
My hair is red. That's the next question, isn't it?
Naturally.
Well, just a henna rinse now and then.
Well, now for the fingerprint. Give me your right thumb, please.
What for?
I want to hitch a ride home and mine is tired. I'm going to take your thumbprint.
I don't want to put my thumb in that dirty old ink.
Now, this won't hurt a bit. Just
no,
give me
I
your
don't
right hand
want
and we'll
to
put it in the ink.
I don't. Well, did you get my fingerprint?
Yes, right on the end of my nose.
Congratulations. Now, may I have my license?
No. Let's test your eyes. Now, I'll hold this white card over your eye. Tell me what you see.
A white card.
No, what do you see out of the other eye?
Nothing.
Why not?
It's closed.
Read those letters on the wall over there.
Okay. M-E-N.
Get out of the door! Never mind. Go ahead on to the driving part of the test. You're not going to pass that.
What makes you so sure?
I know the man who's going to give you the test.
Who is it?
Me!
Oh, no!
Oh, I can't understand it, Liz. If you made that fellow so mad, why did he give you a license?
Well, as soon as he saw how I drove, we made sort of a bargain. He said he'd give me my license if I'd let him out of the car.
I'll make a bargain with you. I'll make a bargain with you. Let's go to the show.
Yeah, all right, George. We'll go right... Oh, look what I found.
What now?
The best thing in the whole scrapbook.
What?
A recipe for how to fix Jell-O. I heard it on the radio one night and I wrote it down. It made such an impression on me, I can almost hear them doing it right now.
J-E-L-L. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O puddings.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tap. Tapioca puddings, yes, sorry.
And now, back to the Coopers. 2 hours ago, Liz and George started to go to a movie, but they were sidetracked by a scrapbook that Liz was pasting things in. Well, right now, George is getting up from the floor and saying for the 10th time...
Honey, look at the time. If we're going to the movie, let's get started.
All right, dear, I'm coming right... Oh, George, remember that affidavit you made me sign?
What are you talking about?
Look, I, Liz Cooper, solemnly swear that I will not interrupt any of my husband's stories, even if I've heard them 100 times.
I remember that now. Brother, it certainly didn't last very long. You're still interrupting my stories.
Only the ones I've heard more than 100 times.
Very funny.
George, remember the night you made me sign that? You were so mad at me. The Atterburys were over for dinner, and afterwards we went into the living room, and you started telling your pride. Oh, Katie, we've got to do something fast. Make some coffee, serve some food, anything.
What's the matter, Mrs. Cooper?
The Atterburys just made a terrible mistake.
Oh, good heavens, what did they do?
Well, George told one of his funny stories, and they laughed at it.
Oh, dear.
Now he'll go on and on telling stories all night. One person snickers, and George thinks his last name is Jessel.
Put the coffee on right away.
Yeah, and make some nice thick sandwiches. He won't be able to talk so much with his mouth full. I'll go back in and try to change the subject.
And the fellow said, no, I don't want that kind of frosting on the top of the wedding cake. Take it back and fix it. Well, anyway, to make a long story short...
It's too late, Cooper boy.
All right, that's the first portion of My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, welcome back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. My vivacious co-host is Lisa Wolf, and
we want to welcome Jen. We're so glad to have you with us tonight. It's a rare treat, so we're happy to have you.
Yes, it is. We love you, Jen.
Sorry, I walked away.
That's
okay.
We were saying all good things.
We were just welcoming you to the show. Yeah. We're happy to have you.
Thank you. It's great to finally be here and see you, like, not on the other side of Twitter.
I'm not on Twitter, but so close.
Somewhere.
Twitter. Yeah, you know, you could take an antibiotic and get rid of that.
Hang on. Please don't laugh.
Please don't encourage him. All right, well, we're listening to My Favorite Husband with Lucille Ball, who, of course, is a genius, an absolute genius. All the things she did. She was the first woman to run a major studio, yeah, too. So she's just an incredible personality. We're enjoying her in this episode called Liz and George Reminisce. Let's go back to 1949 for the conclusion to My Favorite Husband.
Oh, anyway.
Oh, George, don't tell that story. It's so old.
Please, Liz. Well, the fellow came back.
Besides, the Atterberries know that story.
They do not.
They do, too. Everybody does. Don't you?
Well, I'm
not sure.
Oh, you know, the baker has just finished a 5-layer wedding cake, and he asks the customer where he wants it delivered, and the customer says, no place, I'll eat it here.
No, we hadn't heard it.
Oh, I apologize, George. They haven't heard it. Go ahead and tell it.
Thanks a lot.
Well, I thought they'd heard it.
Maybe this will teach you that the stories I tell aren't as old as you think they are, and everybody hasn't heard them.
Yes, George.
Oh, if you think that was funny, Mr. Atterbury, did I ever tell you about the time...
Katie's fixing sandwiches and coffee for all of us.
Oh, that'll be nice, Liz.
Splendid, yes. Yes, like that. Like sandwiches, rye bread.
Well, it's... It's a very funny story, really. It all started on our honeymoon.
Anyone read any good books lately? Have you, Iris?
Elizabeth.
Ooh, he's mad.
Just what are you trying to do?
Please, George, not that broken-down old story about our honeymoon. I know they've heard that one.
Mr. Atterbury, have I told you the story about what happened to Liz and me on our honeymoon?
Not tonight.
Oh. Well, Mrs. Atterbury, did I tell you the funny thing that happened to Liz and me on our honeymoon?
Yes, you did.
Oh. Well, Liz, did I...
I was there.
Oh, that's right.
George, if you have to tell a story, why don't you tell about last 4th of July? Now, there's one you tell wonderfully. It's really a scream.
Well, I don't have to tell a story, you know. I'll live without it.
Well, all right, George. Maybe we should all play bridge.
Bridge would be fine.
Yes, I haven't played bridge for a long time. Play bridge. Yes, contract. I prefer it.
Yeah. last 4th of July was pretty funny at that.
As you were, bridge players.
Liz...
Go ahead, George. It's a very funny story, and I'd like to hear it again. Go ahead.
Well, the Smiths and the Sturms were going on a picnic with us. Well, we started out that morning about, 10 o'clock, and we took along...
It was 12 o'clock.
It was 10 o'clock.
It was 12 o'clock.
Well, what's the difference?
2 hours.
I mean to the story. It doesn't make a darn bit of difference.
It does, too. That's why we were late, and the... Well, I don't want to spoil the story. Go ahead.
Anyway, we got to the picnic grounds and...
The cars.
Hmm?
Don't forget the cars.
Oh, that's right. Well, there were 3 cars. I was first, Howie Sturm was in back of me, and Bill Smith was driving the last car.
Oh, you're ruining the whole thing.
Would you like to tell the story, Liz?
No, but I'm just helping you to tell it right. Howie was first, Bill was second, and we were last.
Maybe Bill was first, you were second, and Howie was last.
Rudolph.
Well, it is. It was the only combination left.
No, Rudolph, there's one more. It might have been Bill first, Howie second.
I take it back. We all went in the same bus.
Well, that's the coward's way out.
Anyway, we got to the picnic grounds about 2 o'clock.
Don't look at me. I'm not going to say anything more.
Good.
I'm not going to tell you what you left out.
We got to the picnic... Did you have to say that, Liz?
I didn't open my mouth.
What did I leave out?
Nothing. Go on. Finish your story.
Well, we spread the food out, and it started to rain.
It poured.
So we all ran for the car, and when we got there...
Well, what happened, boy?
What's the matter, George?
Oh, you interrupted me so much I forget how it ends.
Oh, oh, you're a wonderful storyteller. Oh. Oh, George, I'll never forget the look on your face. I felt so sorry for you.
Well, look at my pathetic expression now, Liz. I want to go to a movie.
All right, poor little baby. Well,
Oh, look at this, George.
What is it?
The Valentine you gave me this year.
Oh, gee, I'd forgotten.
Yeah, well, that's a man for you. I remember perfectly. Oh. We were sitting at the breakfast table when you gave it to me. Oh, George, this Valentine is beautiful. You know the real reason I like Valentine's Day? Hmm. Because it's such a good excuse to be all mushy and gushy about you.
Yeah? What's your excuse the other 364 days? You're mushy all the time.
Yeah, but on Valentine's Day, I can be mushy and loud. I love you, George!
Liz, keep quiet!
I love you, George!
What about Katie?
Katie loves you too, George!
What about the lady next door?
She... What about the lady next door?
She might hear you. Now simmer down.
All right, I'll be quiet. I love you, George.
Now that's better.
Do you love me, George?
Yes, I do.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, George. Anybody want more coffee? No, thank you, Katie. What are we whispering for? Oh, it was just a joke, Katie. We were kidding about Valentine's Day.
Kidding? Mm-hmm. Oh, you should never joke about Valentine's Day. Oh, it's a beautiful occasion.
Why, Katie, I think you have a boyfriend.
Well, I've written a Valentine poem, and I'm going to give it to...
To whom?
I'm going to give it to...
Is that his first or his last name?
Oh, Mrs. Cooper, it's for Mr. Dabney the Butcher.
Oh. Oh, old Heavy Thumb.
Is the butcher your boyfriend, Katie?
Oh, not exactly, but I've always liked him.
Well, you could do worse than Mr. Dabney. He's quite attractive and a good butcher.
Some people may have better beef, but his liver's good. And no one has ox tail and pig's feet like his.
What's it cost to see him?
Never
mind. Well, I do have a problem, though, Mrs. Cooper. I haven't got the nerve to give Mr. Dabney the Valentine I wrote to him, and he'll be here any minute with his delivery. So would you... Give it to him for me.
Why, sure, Katie. Anything to help out romance.
Yeah, well, I can't watch this. I'm going to the bank. Goodbye, dear.
Goodbye, Don.
Oh, here's the Valentine, Mrs. Cooper. Oh, I'm so nervous.
What have you got on this, Katie?
Well, I wanted it scented with an odor he'd like.
But it's all soggy. What'd you do, soak it in perfume?
No, bacon grease.
Well, now that's romantic.
That's Mr. Dabney. I know his buzz.
Well,
I'll hide in the dining room until he's gone.
Okay.
Hi. Oh, hello, Miss Cooper.
Well, hello, Mr. Dabney. Come on in.
Here's your meat order, Miss Cooper. Fresh from Dabney's, the home of happy ham hocks.
Thank you, Mr. Dabney.
It's a pleasure.
Oh, Mr. Dabney, before you go, I have something for you. It's a personal matter.
Yeah.
Yes, I happen to know that one of your customers thinks you're rather nice.
No.
Yes. She's been too bashful to tell you, but since this is Valentine's Day, she wants you to know she likes you a lot.
You know something, Miss Cooper?
What?
I like you a lot, too.
Oh, no. Now, wait a minute. I'm not the one.
Hey, still bashful, eh? You little minx, you.
Oh, just a second now. I'm speaking for someone else.
What's that you're hiding behind your back?
Oh, how did I get mixed up in this? Well, here, this will straighten things out. It's a Valentine.
Oh, Miss Cooper, I feel like such a heel. I ain't got one for you.
Oh, now stop this nonsense.
If I'd only known, I'd have brought you a heart-shaped piece of salami.
Never mind. Look, just read this Valentine. You'll see what I'm trying to tell you.
All right.
Liz.
Oh, it looks beautiful. And how did you know my favorite aroma, Swift's Premium?
Read the Valentine.
All right. If you'll be mine, then I'll be thine. You set my heart a quiver. Say you'll be my Valentine and bring 2 pounds of liver.
Well, that's a practical thought.
Oh, Miss Cooper, this is touching. Did you write this all by your little self?
For the last time, no. Look at the signature.
Well, it's signed, Your Bashful Redhead.
Oh, no. Katie! Katie, where are you?
Oh, don't try to pretend, Liz.
No. Now, you stay on that side of the kitchen table and listen to me. Katie wrote this. I didn't.
Don't try to fight this thing. It's bigger than both of us.
Now, stop talking like that, Mr. Dabney. What about Katie?
She's bigger than both of us, too. Oh, Miss Cooper, I admired you for years. Each little lamb chop you bought, I personally put the pants on. Come here, you bashful redhead.
To me. Katie has red hair, too. We're both redheads. Katie's the one for you.
Listen, two houses may have red roofs, but you don't pick the one with the sagging foundation.
Oh, it was awful. I had to barricade the kitchen door.
I'd forgotten all about that.
Well, Mr. Dabney has, and we haven't had a tender steak since I jilted him.
Hey, that scrapbook really brings back a lot of wonderful memories. What else do you have in there?
No, no more talk about the scrapbook. We're going to the movie right now. What time is it?
2 o'clock.
2 o'clock? Oh, no. Oh, but it was fun reminiscing, wasn't it, George? We'll go to the movie tomorrow night, huh?
Yeah.
Kiss me.
You talk me into it.
Hold me tight, George.
Okay.
Tighter. Tighter. Tighter.
Oh, but Liz!
Go on, pretend I'm a sack of walnuts and crack my shells.
Oh, you're crazy, but you're awful cute.
Honey, you know something.
What?
You're my favorite husband.
Yes, Lucille, what'll you have?
Jell-O, please, but let's sing about it like we did last week, huh? That was fun.
Okay, what song shall we sing?
Oh, doesn't matter, I can't carry a tune anyway.
Oh,
oh, how about Row, Row, Row Your Boat?
Okay. J-E-L-L-O.
Gently down the strime.
Strime?
Don't ask questions, just keep going. Now you sing it.
Okay, you're the boss. J-E-L-L-O, gently down the strime.
The flavors are strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. It doesn't make any sense, but it comes out all right.
Oh, it makes wonderful sense, Lucille. No matter how you arrive at Jell-O, you're in for a treat, because all 6 delicious Jell-O flavors are rich and refreshing with locked-in goodness. Flavors locked right in, so it can't get out until your first luscious spoonful.
Oh, Bob, you're a regular encyclopedia Jell-O Annika.
Well, how you doing? Here's another choice tidbit of information, Lucille. Jell-O tastes so cool and fruitful, rich, and tempting, it makes you think of the orchard or the berry patch. And these bright, shimmering colors are as gay as the 4th of July.
Oh, I'm hungry. Come on, let's go get some Jell-O.
Hey, wait a minute. We have to finish this song.
Oh, yes.
Okay, J-E-L-L-O, now you're on the ball.
Jell-O is wonderful, sponsors are marvelous.
We'll see you next fall. I've been listening to My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning, and based on characters created by Isabel Scott Rorick. Tonight's transcribed program was produced and directed
by... Wait a minute, Bob. This is the last show until fall, and I want to get into the act and say thanks to our director, Jess Oppenheimer, and Madeline Pugh and Bob Carroll Jr., who wrote the scripts with him. And thanks to Marlon Skiles for his original music, and Wilbur Hatch, who conducted the orchestra, and Ray Lithgow, our engineer, and Clark Casey for his fine sound effects. And a million thanks to Richard Denning, who just is George Cooper. And Ruth Parrott, who plays the part of Katie, and the Atterberries, Gail Gordon and Bea Benaderet, and Frank Nelson and Hans Conried, and you, Bob Lamont. And those wonderful Jell-O people who played the part of the sponsor and are just as nice as the desserts they make. We'll all be back on the 2nd of September. Goodbye, everybody, and thank you.
Be sure to see Lucille Ball and Bob Hope in that wonderful Paramount picture, Sorrowful Jones. It's playing at your favorite theater now. My Favorite Husband will be back at the same time starting September 2nd. See you then. Bob Lamond speaking.
All right, that's My Favorite Husband from July 1st, 1949. Liz and George reminisce, starring Lucille Ball and Richard Denning, sponsored by Jell-O, as heard on CBS. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, well, in our next hour, we're going to tune in to Gunsmoke, the greatest adult Western series of the golden age of radio. William Conrad as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon. Don't miss that. It's coming your way in just a few minutes. Then after that, it's The Adventures of Philip Marlowe with Gerald Moore as Philip Marlowe, Raymond Chandler's tough private eye. So quite a bit more classic radio coming your way.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Jen. All right, it is 6 minutes after midnight. Happy Sunday morning to you. We will be here for two more hours playing your favorite classic radio shows. In this hour, it's Gunsmoke, and then in the 1 to 2 a.m. hour, it is The Adventures of Philip Marlowe from 1950. So stay tuned to 720 WGN. But it's time now, Lisa, to play our game. Cat's Pride, is it real or is it ridiculous?
Yeah, that's right. And our celebrity is Nicole Kidman.
Ah, yes.
Yes. And the prize is the highly coveted Never Measure. So we are going to go with caller number 4.
All right.
And our number is 312-981-7200. Call in now, and you could be on the air playing Cat's Pride, Real or Ridiculous.
Call now. We'll be right back. Come on, baby. Let's get
ridiculous. We have Richard on the phone to get real or ridiculous. Hey, Richard.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm great.
Hello,
how are you?
Hi there, Richard.
Well, I'm hanging right in there, guys.
All good.
Right.
You know a few things about Nicole Kidman?
Well, I've seen her in some movies.
I think that'll do it. That'll okay. do it. All right, here we go. Number one, Nicole Kidman.
I'd like to see her in person.
I bet you would. I thought you were going to say something else when you said you'd like to see her. All right, number one, Nicole Kidman starred in Moulin Rouge and received her first Academy Award nomination for Best Actress. Is that real or ridiculous?
I would say that would be real.
Nope. I say it's ridiculous. I think she got her first Academy Award nomination for a movie, I'm trying to think, for, it's that movie where she played the...
Oh, that one.
Where Anyhow. She played a newscaster. She played a newscaster in it, and Matt...
Oh, I saw that.
Matt Dillon was in it, too. I think
I
that's
I saw that
the
movie, but you're not correct. Richard okay. is right. So
oh, my
I'll
gosh.
Let you go on and on.
Way to go, Richard. This is for you. The movie was To Die For. I thought she was nominated
I
for that.
I saw that, but Moulin Rouge was her
All
first
right,
Academy Award nomination. For best
See,
actress.
I'm having the candy dump.
You have a candy dump.
I'm having the candy
dump,
Richard. I can
smell it all the way over here. Okay, number two. She was born in Melbourne, Australia. Is that real or ridiculous?
I don't know. Carl, what do you say?
I think so, but I'm now on a bad streak here all of a sudden. But I'm going to say real. All right.
I'm going to go along with Carl.
Okay.
All right. You should not go along with Carl.
Oh, gosh.
She was born in Honolulu, Hawaii.
What?
Yeah.
Gosh, she could run for president then.
Okay, we'll leave that one alone. And number three, because you're doing so well, Carl. She starred as the voice of Sally Carrera in the animated film Cars. Is that real or ridiculous?
I'm going to say real.
I'm going to say ridiculous.
That one is ridiculous.
Oh, I got one.
You got
finally.
One right.
Oh, my gosh.
You each got one right.
This is for Richard. Sorry, Richard. And this is for me.
She was in Happy Feet, which is an animated film, but not Cars. But she each got one right. So that's pretty darn good.
No, I think Richard got two right.
I think he got one. He got the first one.
Oh. We got the first one. And
don't listen to Carl.
Out on the second one.
Oh, all right. Well,
that's right. Either way.
I let you down, Richard. I'm sorry, buddy.
Well, hey, I'll get over it, Carl.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
He's going to get over it right now because, Richard, you've won the Never Measure. And you can easily center and level and hang your wall decorations fast and no need to use a measuring tape or calculate fractions. It is veteran-owned, made in the USA. You can get yours at nevermeasure.com. I have one, and I love it. You're going to love it, too. I promise
you. I don't have one because I have no pull at this radio station at all, Richard.
Well, I get the good stuff around here. So.
Yeah.
And I don't share well.
Wrong with that, Lisa.
That's right.
She doesn't even let
me
use her Never Measure. Take care, Richard. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
All right. He's a big winner.
Definitely.
Won a Never Measure. And I'm going to call in one of these times to the show.
You should.
And try to win a Never Measure.
You should. See what you can do.
I'm going to try to do that. All right, it's time for Gunsmoke. And we do have a text in line. Don't forget, 312-981-7200. Text us. We love hearing from our listeners.
Yep, please text in. I'm awake, and I love to hear from you.
Did you have a nap today? Slight nap?
Kind of rested
I
for
did.
A little while.
I did. I had like a good hour nap, power nap.
I can tell
good,
you're awake.
Wide awake.
Awake and full of candy.
Wide awake. All right, time for Gunsmoke. William Conrad stars as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon. This was a terrific series. One of my favorites, really, of the Western genre. There was a lot of Westerns on radio, Lisa, but this was the best adult Western. There were, you know, all kinds of adult Westerns. Have Gun, Will Travel, which is probably, in my opinion, the second best one. There was Fort Laramie. But there was a lot of kids' Western shows, like The Lone Ranger, Roy Rogers, Gene Autry, Hopalong Cassidy. Those were kind of more for the juvenile audience. This was an adult Western, and it was very gritty and very dark, and there was murders, and there was all kinds of stuff on this show. And it was the number one show on television when it made its transition with a whole new cast. The radio cast did not make the transition to television. Of course, James Arness played Dillon on radio. But on television. But we have a radio broadcast for you now starring William Conrad from October 3rd, 1952. This is called Kane. Here's part one now of Gunsmoke.
Dodge City and in the territory on west, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America. The story of a man who moved with it. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Chester, do you have to do that? You're just stirring up a lot of dust.
Well, cleanliness is next to godliness, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, I know, Chester, but all you're doing is getting it off the floor into the air. Man can hardly breathe in here.
All right, Mr. Dillon. I'll do my sweeping later.
Yeah, good.
My mother taught me that, Mr. Dillon.
Taught you what, Chester?
That cleanliness is next to godliness. She was a fine woman, too.
Oh, look, Chester, it's a good saying, and it's probably true, and I got nothing against your mother except that she also should have taught you how to sweep.
Well, maybe she just didn't have the time, Mr. Dillon. You see, there was an awful lot of us, and what with chores and...
Oh, hello, Doc.
Come on, I'll buy you a drink.
What?
Doc said he'd buy you a drink, Mr. Dillon.
He really said that?
You coming?
Doc, you got to quit throwing your money around the way you do.
Maybe you don't need a drink.
Wait a minute, Doc. I'm with you. I'll tell you all about it when I get back, Chester.
I'd be mighty interested, Mr. Dillon. Oh, sure be glad when it gets winter again.
Why, Doc? You'll just complain about the cold, then.
I suppose. You go sit with Kitty, Matt. I'll bring a bottle of Irish in.
Okay, Doc. Hello, Kitty.
Hello, Matt. What are you and Doc up to?
Yeah, he wants someone to talk to, so he picked me. And you.
Fine. I'm a good listener. Lots of practice.
I say, you like Jameson's, don't you, Kitty?
Sure, Doc. What are we celebrating?
Let's see here. We'll drink to a fella that you don't know.
Uh-huh.
Cain Vestal.
Well, here's to him.
Yeah.
Here's to him. Yes, he'll be dead in a couple of months.
What?
That's what I told him.
What do you mean, Doc?
Well, I'm not the only one who's told him that. I'm just the last.
Well, who is this Cain Vestal, Doc?
Oh, it's just a fella. Came in on the train last night. Leaving for Arizona tomorrow.
Huh?
That's where he's gonna die. In Arizona. He's a musician. He plays the guitar, he tells me.
Well, how's he gonna die?
Consumption. He's got it bad. I'm the last doctor he's gonna ask about it, he says.
Poor fella.
Yes, climate out there, keep him going for a little while longer. Oh, I don't know. He's such a sad man for some reason.
Well, who wouldn't be, Doc?
No, Kitty. I think Cain's been sad for a long, long time. A very nice fellow, too.
Nothing can help him, huh?
No, nothing.
You know, it's a funny thing, Doc. I'm just sitting here thinking. Sometimes you have to tell men they're going to die. Sometimes I have to.
Yeah, that's right, man. Oh, I'm sorry. There is. See that fellow with the car there? He just came in.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't think he knows anyone around here. You mind if I ask him over?
Sure. You'd party, Doc.
Oh, good. Cain? Cain? Over here? Sit down. Sit down. Cain, this is Kitty.
Hello, Cain.
This is Kitty. This is Marshall Dillon.
Hello, Marshall.
Pleasure to meet you.
Nice to meet you. There we are. Have a drink.
Oh, thank you, Doc.
Is your first trip west, Cain?
Yes, Marshall, it is.
Oh, well, where are you from?
No place in particular, Miss Kitty. I seem to spend most of my life on the Mississippi River.
I thought you were a musician.
I am. I was hired to ride the river boats and play my guitar for the passengers.
Oh.
Well, at least you've had a constant change of scenery.
Yeah.
After 20 years of going up and down that river, it got pretty familiar, Marshal.
Well, Cain, I knew a young fella back in St. Louis before the war, and he was learning to be a river pilot. Say, I wonder if you ever ran into him. Name of Clemens, Sam Clemens?
No, Doc, I don't believe I did.
Oh, he was a very amusing fella. He was just chock full of stories.
You leaving Dodge tomorrow, Cain?
I'm headed for Arizona, Miss Kitty. No reflection on Dodge, though.
If you hit a place out there called Tombstone, I wish you'd look up Virgil Earp for me. Tell him I sent you, huh?
Thanks, Marshal. I'll do that.
Say, Kane, I wonder, could I ask you a favor?
Why, certainly, Miss Kitty. Anything at all.
Well, would you play something for us?
I had an idea that's what it'd be. Anything in particular?
Oh, play something you like, Kane.
Another girl I knew used to like this one.
Going to stay here a while. Maybe you could teach me to play like that, huh?
It'd be a pleasure, Miss Kitty. But I'm afraid I won't be around for long.
Morning, Mr. Dillon.
It's noon, Chester.
Yes, sir, I know, but you went off with Doc yesterday, so I figured I had a little time coming today.
Well, that depends on how you spent it. Now, if you've been gambling,
Now, Mr. Dillon, you know I never gamble. No, sirree. I was out helping a fellow learn to shoot a six-gun, that's all.
Now? You mean there's a man in Dodge who doesn't know how?
This fellow don't. Never had one in his hand before. He's a musician.
What?
Plays the guitar, he told me.
You mean Kane? Kane Vestal?
Yeah, so that's his name. Nice a fellow you'd ever want to meet.
Yeah, but he was supposed to leave on the stage this morning. And what's he doing with a six-gun anyway?
Well, I don't know, Mr. Dillon. He just come by here early this morning and asked me if I'd teach him.
Yeah. Now, where'd he get the gun?
Said he'd just bought it. Anything wrong, Mr. Dillon?
No. It just doesn't add up somehow. So.
Well, he won't cause any trouble. He's not the sort.
You never know, Chester.
No, sir. My Kitty looks pretty this morning. She's got a yellow parasol, Mr. Dillon.
Kitty? Oh, I think I'll go see her for a minute. I'll be right back, Chester.
Yes, sir, Mr. Dillon.
Kitty?
Hello, Matt.
Kitty, I'd like to talk to you for a minute.
Well, sure. What is it?
I'm curious about something, Kitty. Maybe you can help me.
Maybe.
How long was Kane Vessel with you yesterday?
Kane? Oh, well, he didn't leave till evening. Why?
Well, he didn't go out on the stage this morning, and he's bought himself a six gun. You any idea why?
A gun?
Huh?
Didn't sound like Kane.
Anything happened yesterday, Kitty, or did he tell you anything?
Well, yeah, there was one thing, Matt. Joel Adams and a couple of his men came in.
Yeah.
Kane got pretty upset when he saw him had a bad coughing spell.
Huh?
Later, he asked a lot of questions about Adams.
Well, what'd you tell him?
Just that Adams is a big landowner around here that Nobody who isn't working for him likes him very much. That's all I know, anyway.
Yeah. They didn't talk, Adams and Kane.
No. I don't think they even know each other.
Well, anyway, he sure isn't the sort to be packing a gun.
You'll just get into trouble, Matt.
Yeah. Where's he staying, did he say?
Dodge House, I think.
Yeah. Thanks, Kitty. I'll see you later.
There is the first portion of Gunsmoke, October 3rd, 1952. Kane is the name of that episode, with William Conrad as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon. And you hear the quality of the shows that we air. And the reason why our quality of these radio shows, the sound quality, is so superb is because we work with the rights holders. We license the show Gunsmoke, and we get it from the master recordings, and that is why the quality sounds like it does. We pay royalties for the shows we sell, and we wanted to make it very easy for our listeners to collect superior quality classic radio shows, all uncut, nothing removed from them. All the original commercials, all the IDs, everything is on there through the Classic Radio Club. It's a club that Lisa and I and Mike put together. I think we started it around September of last year. We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of members who have joined the club. And now it's easier than ever, Lisa, to join the club. You know why?
Because it's only a dollar for the first month.
Yes, $1.
So I think we've done that so that you will give it a try. And we're so sure that you'll love it. You'll stay in it. And if you don't want to, that's no problem. You can cancel at any time. But if you don't, once a month, every single month, you will get either CDs delivered to your door, or you can have it emailed to you via digital download, whichever works better for you.
Yeah, and I also write very, very copious liner notes about every episode plus the series. So in other words, if there's a Gunsmoke in the 10 episodes you get, not only will I write about that particular episode, but then I'll tell you a lot about Gunsmoke, the series itself. So that comes via PDF if you're a digital member, or it comes on four sheets of paper for the 10 shows in the box with the CDs. So you get five CDs plus the liner notes for only a dollar if you join the Classic Radio Club, plus $4.99 shipping and handling. Or if you join the digital option, you'll get the same 10 shows plus the liner notes for only $1 the first month.
It's a lot of information. If you have questions, you can check it all out at the website, which is classicradioclub.com. And if you have any questions, of course, you're always welcome to ask us as well.
Yeah, go to classicradioclub.com. We hope you'll join. It's only a dollar. Check it out. I think you will love it. And there's also some great testimonials from our members that they've written about being a member, and that's at the website too, classicradioclub.com. All right, let's take a very short break, then we'll be right back.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Roger.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Roger.
If there's anyone that works at this radio station that loves classic radio, it's Roger Badish.
Yes.
He loves these classic radio shows. You know how much he loves them, Lisa?
Enough that you gave him, what, like 50 CDs for
Christmas? No, that's not what I was saying. The thing is, he even is in these reenactments that they do.
Yeah. Actually, that
is someone who loves classic radio.
Can I give you a little inside tip?
Yeah.
So there are two shows coming up in March.
Mm-hmm.
And because the performance days have changed, because of my personal schedule, I'm not able to make it.
Oh, no.
But they begged me this time around to please be the announcer for Sam Spade, an episode of Sam Spade.
Wow.
And guess who Sam Spade is going to be?
No. Who's playing Sam Spade?
John Landecker.
No way.
Way?
That's going to be great.
Yeah.
So do you have the exact date when that is, and is it at the museum?
It's at the Cultural Center.
Yeah, Cultural Center.
Cultural Center downtown.
Yeah.
I will tell you the exact date and the exact time.
I would love to see that.
It is Thursday night, March 14th. Doors open at 6, show at 7, and there's an episode of Escape.
Oh, man. So it's The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective, and Escape.
Yep.
And
that's at the Claudia Cassidy Theater at the Chicago
fantastic.
Cultural Center.
Fantastic. All right. Well, we'll promote it a little bit a little closer to the thing.
Sure, sure.
But right now, it's time for the conclusion to Gunsmoke.
Come in.
Hello, Kane.
I'm Marshal Dillon. Come in, come in.
Thank you.
What can I do for you, Marshal?
I thought you were leaving Dodge on the stage this morning.
Well, I was, Marshal, but I changed my mind. You know how it is.
Sure, Kane, sure. Now, we're glad to have you around. I'm just curious, though. Stay and have anything to do with that gun you bought this morning?
Oh, Chester told you. I thought he would. He's a good teacher, Marshal.
Yeah. But that doesn't answer my question.
Do I have to answer it?
I'm just trying to help you, that's all.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Marshal, but I'm afraid there's nothing you can do.
Look, Kane, you're new in this country. Man like you just can't pick up a six gun and call himself a fighting man. Not and expect to live through it.
I certainly lay no claim to be a fighting man.
Then why did you buy that gun?
There's no law out here against a man having a gun, is there, Marshal?
No. But any man who carries one is expected to use it when the time comes. You'd be a lot safer without one.
Being safe doesn't mean a whole lot to me, Marshal. Not now.
Yeah, I know. Doc told me. What's it all about?
It's a long story. And an old one, I suppose. I'd really rather not talk about it.
Well, I can't force you to. But tell me this. Does it have anything to do with Joel Adams?
Yes, it does, Marshal. I'm going to kill him.
When?
I don't know. Anytime.
Well, why?
That's a long story I mentioned.
All right, Kane. But if you try to face him, he'll kill you before you got that gun halfway out of your belt. And if you shoot him any other way, you'll hang for it.
You've forgotten something, Marshal.
What?
No matter what I do, I'm going to die soon anyway. A month or two isn't going to make any difference.
You hate Adams that much?
I wouldn't kill a man I didn't hate, would I?
I didn't think you were the sort of man who'd kill anyone.
Only Joel Adams, Marshal.
Then I gotta warn him about you.
Well, I understand, Marshal. It's all right. He doesn't know me anyway. Never even saw me before.
But you want to kill him?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'll take your gun away from you, but you'll just find another one. And I can't arrest you unless I catch you trying to bushwhack him.
I'm sorry for the trouble I'm causing you, Marshal.
You know, I've never had to deal with a man like you before, Kane. Maybe I ought to just tie you up and throw you on that stage.
You could. But I'd just come right back.
Yeah, I guess you would.
I'm sorry this has to happen here in Dodge, Marshal.
Then why don't you leave?
I guess I hate Joel Adams too much.
All right, Kane, I'm through trying to convince you. So long.
Bye, Marshal.
Kane Vestal, Marshal, and I never saw him before last night.
You must have known him somewhere, Adams.
You're trying to make me out a liar, Marshal.
I'm trying to save Kane's life and yours, maybe.
No, he ain't gonna shoot me. I'll kill him first time he looks sideways.
Maybe you won't see him.
Oh?
Shoot me in the back, eh? Well, in that case, it...
In that case, what?
Why, nothing, Dylan, nothing. Forget it.
If Kane's shot in the back, you'll be the first man I take in, Adams.
I don't even know him. Why should I shoot him?
I'm only warning you.
Well, just leave me be, Marshal. I can take care of myself.
See that you do, Adams, and only yourself.
Why, sure, Marshal. I don't much like the idea of some stranger gunning for me. Makes me sort of uneasy.
There must be some reason for it.
Don't start it again, Marshal. Ain't no reason.
I know. You've led a blameless life. You never hurt anyone.
I told you twice.
There are men around here who'd shoot you on sight if they thought they could get by with it. I don't think you were ever any good, Adam, so don't tell me Kane's got no reason. I don't believe it.
You're pushing me now, Marshal.
I'm tired of your talk, that's all. Maybe it's true you don't know him, but he sure knows something about you.
Well, then he'll wish you didn't. That's all I got to say.
Just keep out of his way. Give it a little time, and maybe there won't be any killing at all.
Why, sure. All the time in the world.
All right, Adams. I've done all I can.
Just don't worry about me.
I'm not.
Then goodbye, Marshal.
Goodbye.
Quiet around town tonight, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah. There's a trail herd due in a couple of days. I suppose business will pick up then.
You'd think those cowboys be too tuckered out after a ride like that to have any juice left in them at all, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah, they're too poor to cut loose any other time.
Well, that don't stop them down in Texas, Mr. Dillon.
No?
No. It's just like an uncle of mine back in Waco. He was poor, oh, he was mean poor. But he always said the only good money was to have fun with.
Oh, did he have fun?
But, no, he was too poor, like I said.
All right, Chester, all right. All I ask is that you don't try to explain it to me.
Well, but there's nothing to explain, Mr. Dillon. It's just that he was the one poorest
Chester.
Man you'd ever...
Marshal, say, you want to talk to Kane Vestal?
What?
Kane is upstairs in my office.
He been shot?
No, not shot. Beat up.
Well, how is he, Doc?
Well, he's not too bad. A couple of cowboys found him just outside of town. They heard a shot and said two men rode off before they could stop them.
Yeah?
And I guess whoever it was, they didn't have time to finish the job. They just got started working on him.
So Adams made the first move, huh? I'll be back soon, Chester.
Yes, sir, Mr. Dillon. They hit him on the head with a gun butt and scratched him up some. Outside of that, he's fine.
It's still a Saul, even if they didn't kill him, Doc.
Yeah, I suppose it is. Anyway, they took a shot at him when they heard those riders coming along. Went right through his coat.
Yeah. They probably think he's dead.
So that's where you went, Doc. I might have known.
Didn't even give you a chance to use that gun, did he, Kane?
I didn't have a gun on me, Marshal, but it wasn't he. It was they.
Huh? Did you recognize them?
Well, I don't know many people around here.
You know Joel Adams, so you told me.
It wasn't Adam.
Could you pick him out if you saw him again?
No, Marshal, I don't believe I could.
Where were you when they grabbed you, Kane?
End of Front Street. I was taking a walk after supper. They rode up behind me, one on each side, lifted me up, and carried me out of town a ways.
You must have got a good look at them, at least when they got off their horses.
It was too dark, Marshal.
Yeah. Doc, how long has he been here?
Oh, about half an hour, Marshal.
Those cowboys who saw you, Kane, they brought you right in here, didn't they?
Yes.
So it was maybe an hour ago when those two men hauled you out of town? It was plenty light enough then.
Was it, Marshal?
You're gonna fight it yourself, aren't you?
Yes, Marshal. It's my affair.
It was, Kane, but you've been assaulted and shot at, so it's the law's business now.
I won't prefer any charges, Marshal.
You don't have to. I've seen you, and I know who did it, or who hired it done, as well as you do.
Please, Marshal. I got to handle this my own way.
There's a law that says you can't murder a man, Kane, and the same law says he can't murder you. Are you so full of hate you can't get that through your head?
I guess that's it, Marshal.
All right, Kane. You do what you have to do. So will I. Hello, Adams. I've been looking for you.
That's late, Dylan. Can't you see me tomorrow?
It's not even midnight. That's early for you.
You see how this marshal's always trying to get me on the prod, boys?
Yeah, he is. These boys of yours play pretty rough themselves, Adams.
Meaning?
Didn't they tell you?
Tell me what?
What they did to Cain Vestal?
They did not kill Cain Vestal, and you can't prove it.
No, Adams, I can't. Cain isn't even dead.
What?
You know, I'm curious, Adams. Why'd you think he might be?
Why, somebody said he got himself hurt.
Joel Adams.
You arranged this, Marshal?
You know I didn't.
Who is he? What does he want?
Hello, Joel Adams. Don't strain yourself so you don't know me.
Who are you?
Cain Vestal. But my name doesn't matter.
What are you haunting me for? I never saw you before in my life.
That's true. You didn't. But we had a friend in common once.
A friend? Who?
Julie Travis.
What about Julie?
You were a riverboat gambler then, Adams, and you had money and fine clothes and a way with women, especially young girls. Julie was only 16 at the time.
Never mind all that.
So she went away with you to be married, you told her.
Oh. I think I guessed the rest. You wanted to marry her, but I got her instead. Is that it?
That's it, Adams. That's exactly it.
Oh, now I thought you really had something on your mind, Vestal. Well, all right, why don't you get out of here and quit bothering people while you can still walk?
Julie killed herself, Adam. She committed suicide.
What?
You didn't know that, did you?
Well, it's got nothing to do with me.
Because you never married her after all. It was just a year after you abandoned her in New Orleans. I think it has a lot to do with you, Joel Adams.
What are your plans, mister? I see you got a gun in your belt.
Gonna kill you.
So? When?
Now. Right now.
All right, Vestal, draw.
Leave the gun where it is, Cain.
One thing I always promised myself, Adams. Someday I'd spit in your face.
Why, you...
Give me the gun, Adams. He's dead.
Well, he was going to kill me. You heard him.
He wanted you dead, Adams, any way he could manage.
I know it. That's what I say.
You're under arrest for murder.
For... What... It was a gunfight.
Cain never even moved for his gun.
Well, then I'll hang for this. He couldn't have got me any other way.
No, don't suppose he could have.
I remember the river gamblers used to say, no matter how you win, so long as you win. And Cain should have been a gambler.
Maybe he was. Come on, let's go.
Gunsmoke, transcribed under the direction of Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was especially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell, with Georgia Ellis and Larry Dobkin. Parley Bayer is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc. Clancy Cassell speaking. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. This Sunday night, Edgar Bergen and Company, and Eve Arden is our Miss Brooks. Yes, it's the Bergen and McCarthy Show with Mortimer Snerd, Podine Puffington, Effie Clinker, Ray Noble's Orchestra, and guest stars. Back Sunday nights at the Star's Address starting this weekend. Returning the same night is our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden as an English teacher ever seeking her special degree in romance. For comedy galore, enjoy Bergen and McCarthy and Our Miss Brooks on most of these same stations. Back this Sunday night, presented by CBS Radio.
All right, there you have it. One of the best westerns of the golden age of radio, Gunsmoke, from October 3rd, 1952. A show called Kane, starring William Conrad as U.S. Marshal Matt Dillon. Also in that cast, you heard Georgia Ellis, Harry Bartell, Howard McNear, John Meston was the writer, Lawrence Dobkin, Parley Bear. Now, Parley Bear, Lisa, was the Keebler elf, the main Keebler elf on those commercials. Not anymore because Parley's passed, but way back maybe 10 years ago when you were watching the Keebler commercials and it was the main elf, you know, with the white hair, Parley Bear. But, of course, he was the mayor on the Andy Griffith Show, did a lot of radio, and he was always Chester Proudfoot on Gunsmoke. I hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. One of our new sponsors, right there, Lisa Woodman's.
Well, my name's
they're amazing.
Lisa, and I shop at Woodman's.
Yep, Lisa does shop at Woodman's. So do I, and in fact, one day, a few weeks ago, after the show, because they're open 24 hours a day, we stopped in and did our little shopping.
We picked up a few snacks for
up
the radio
some stuff.
Show.
It was a lot of fun. And Woodman's, they're huge, gigantic stores. They have everything you could possibly imagine. And there's four stores in the Chicagoland area. There's like 14 or 15 stores in the Wisconsin area, and the signal reaches all the way out there. But one of the best things about Woodman's is not only do they have everything you could ever imagine, and their prices are very low, they're low every single day pricing, but they are sponsoring our show and sending you 12 classic radio shows when you take a photo of your Woodman's receipt. And people, every single day, Lisa, we get these in. Every single day, people are sending in the photo of their receipt, and we're sending them 12 classic radio shows via digital download in that email. So here's how you do it, folks. Shop at Woodman's, take a photo of your receipt, mail it to Woodman's, email it to woodmanswgn@gmail.com. That's all you have to do, right, Lisa?
Nothing to it.
Very simple. All right, in our next hour, we're going to tune in to the adventures of Philip Marlowe going back to 1950. That's probably, I would say, out of all of the detectives on radio, Philip Marlowe would have to be in the top three or four. I would say Boston Blackie, Philip Marlowe, Sam Spade. Those were probably the top ones. Maybe, I'm trying to think now, Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. That was a good one. Although, you know, some people say Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar wasn't really a detective. He was an insurance investigator, but pretty close. Boston Blackie, my favorite, of course. I just, for some reason, just love that show. But there were some other ones. Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator was a good one. And, of course, Sherlock Holmes. Yeah. You know, we should do I think we're going to do a Detectives Weekend coming up. I think there is a whole weekend of detective shows going on. People love detectives. And also, real quick, want to remind everybody, for $1, you can join, for the first month, the Classic Radio Club. And if you don't like it, you could always cancel, but go to classicradioclub.com. You will get 10 of the best classic radio shows of all time for only $1. You can get them digitally downloaded right to your computer along with liner notes, $1. Or you can get the 5 CDs, which is a $40 product. You get that sent to your home for a dollar plus $4.99 shipping and handling. So get the CDs, check them out. There's all kinds of liner notes. The shows sound amazing. Or have it sent to your email. Right.
It's a dollar for the first month because we want you to give it a shot. It's a little bit more than that after that, but well worth it.
Yeah. So check it all out at classicradioclub.com. You know, I was out to dinner with our sponsor yesterday, Dan Jaffe from Cat's Pride. He took me to Catch 35. What a nice restaurant that is here. Fancy Dancy, let me tell you.
Yeah, I don't go fancy.
It was so good. And we had a great time there, Dan Jaffe and I. And he said to me, you know, I love being part of the Classic Radio Club, but can you switch me over to the digital membership? Because I like to listen to these shows in my car. And he doesn't have a CD player in his car.
Yeah.
It's a new, brand new car. And so he doesn't have the CD player. So he said, hey, can you switch me over to the digital program? I said, no problem. You know, so he likes to just Bluetooth it. And that's what happens. If you are a digital member of the Classic Radio Club, you get that email sent to you every month. You can just put it on any of your devices. You can Bluetooth it. You can have it on your phone. You can have it on your computer, wherever you want.
You're sounding a little technology educated here. I know. Okay.
Just hanging out with you because you know all this stuff. And Mike, he's really good too.
He's good.
All right. So that's that. Stick around because we have the adventures of Philip Marlowe coming your way next.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger. It is 6 minutes after 1 in the morning here on Sunday morning, and we have the adventures of Philip Marlowe for you, one of the best of the detective shows from the golden age of radio. We had a great lineup tonight. Great lineup.
Yeah, we generally
My Favorite Husband, Gunsmoke, Adventures of Philip Marlowe. What's on tomorrow?
Tonight, we have tonight. A suspense.
Yeah.
And The Life of Riley.
Wow.
It's a great weekend.
We are good.
Aren't we?
Gosh, we like giving our listeners the best of the best from the golden age of radio. So stick around. Just a few minutes, we'll start The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. But right now, Lisa, it's time to play our game, Cat's Pride. Is it real or is it ridiculous?
Yes, the celebrity is Gene Wilder.
Oh, wow.
And we are going to be giving away a Twilight Zone 4 CD set to whoever's going to play a little Cat's Pride, real or ridiculous. We are looking for caller number 5.
All right.
The number is 312-981-7200. Call now, and we will be right back. Play the game.
All right. See you in a few.
Come on, baby. Let's get ridiculous. And we have Margaret on the phone. Hey, Margaret.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
Terrific. We're going to do a little real or ridiculous. You have a lifeline over here.
Hi, Margaret.
Yeah, very smart one.
Oh,
yes,
thank
indeed.
You.
Gene Wilder. Okay, number one. He produced a memoir in 2005 called Kiss Me Like a Stranger. Is that real or ridiculous?
Let me see. I just say real.
Carl?
Sounds real.
Sounds real?
I might agree.
It's real.
Yeah.
Yeah. So far, so good. Number two, when he auditioned to play Willy Wonka in the film adaptation of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, director Mel Stewart immediately offered him the role after reciting just a few lines.
Hmm. What do you think, Barbara?
I'll say real.
I'm going to say real also.
It's real.
Man, we're good, Margaret,
You're
me and
good.
You. We're a good team.
He guest starred on 2 episodes of NBC's Will and Grace. Real or ridiculous?
Let me see. I'll take ridiculous.
Oh, darn, I'm going to have to go against you. I think I'm going to say real.
It's real.
Oh.
Not only is it real, he won a Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Guest Actor in a Comedy Series when he did it.
Margaret, I got to give you one of these. Sorry.
Hey, Margaret. That's okay. You did a great job. You've won the Twilight Zone 4 CD set, and it is hosted by Stacey Keach, and it has some of the best, creepiest radio adaptations of Twilight Zone radio dramas. So I hope that you enjoy that.
Oh, I sure will.
And take care. It was
Thanks,
great talking
Margaret.
To you.
Take care, hon. Appreciate
okay.
you.
Bye.
Bye. She's a big winner. She
sure
won
is.
Some Twilight
she did a
Zone.
Great job.
Lisa, I think I've gotten like seven right out of nine. That's not bad. That's pretty good.
It's great.
For me.
Yeah. It's all that.
I think it's the candy.
It's the candy.
Yeah. I had a bunch of candy.
You should keep up with that.
Yeah.
Just keep up with the candy.
My waist is keeping up with it. I'll tell you that.
It's good for your teeth, too.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's time now for the adventures of Philip Marlowe. Great detective series. And the detective Philip Marlowe, of course, was created by Raymond Chandler. His first novel, The Big Sleep, was the first time we ever read about Philip Marlowe. And then there were six subsequent Chandler novels. Now, in the films, Philip Marlowe was played by Dick Powell, Robert Montgomery, Humphrey Bogart, James Garner, Robert Mitchum, and Carl Amari. Did you know that? Oh, well, maybe not.
I did
Carl
not know
Amari.
That. Yeah.
Premiered on radio June 17th, 1947. Van Heflin was radio's first Philip Marlowe. But then in 1948, the show moved from NBC to CBS, and they hired Gerald Moore, who really became synonymous with the series. His voice is who you think about when you listen or think about Philip Marlowe on radio.
I'm thinking about him, right.
Gerald Moore. The radio show lasted until 1951. Then there was a 1959 TV series starring Philip Carey. We have an episode for you now going back to May 30th, 1950. This is called The Bedside Manor. Here's Gerald Moore in part one of The Adventures of Philip Marlowe.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road. And those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. There's no other end. But they never learn.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Bedside Manners.
Get your hat and hit the street.
Piper, get your paper. Hiya, Mr. Marlowe.
Hiya, Tommy.
Paper tonight?
Okay, kid. Here you are.
Thanks. Take it easy now.
Sure.
Hey, Mr. Marlowe, your change. Just a minute. Mr. Marlowe, watch it. Turn it out. Hey, you. Holy cats, call an ambulance. Somebody hang on, Mr. Marlowe. Don't try to move. You're going to be okay. Just take it easy.
That's the way it happened. 2 weeks ago, when they scraped me up off the pavement, I felt like everything must have been broken. But finally, the doctor boiled it all down to a fractured tibia and assorted bruises. Headed me 10 days in the hospital, tangled up with enough pulleys, weights, and trapeze bars to rig a circus tent. After which, I managed to get sprung to the peace and quiet of my own apartment. There, on a special bed in my living room, I spent 4 days scratching my broken leg through an inch of plastic cast while I worried about the business I was missing. Until finally, Ordine Patterson, a girl with a multi-million-dollar estate I'd worked for once, insisted on seeing me immediately about a job, one she was sure I could handle, even flat on my back.
Phil, it's about my brother, Maynard.
Oh, another jam, huh?
Yes.
Oh. Wait a minute, I gotta get comfortable. I guess your father knew his son pretty well when he left. Left all that dough in your hands, Ordine.
Yes, only this time, I sincerely believe Maynard's learned his lesson, Phil. He's worried sick. And frankly, so am I.
So am I, if I can straighten this leg out. Well, if you think I can help in this condition, it can't be too serious.
Right.
Hey, before you sit down, reach me a cigarette, will you?
Yeah, sure. Sure, Phil. Here it is.
Oh, thanks.
Phil, last Saturday night, Maynard went out on a binge. He got home at 4 o'clock in the morning, awfully intoxicated.
Well, it's not unusual for Maynard, is it?
No, except this time he was frightened, Phil. Scared stiff.
Oh, what about?
Well, that's just the point. We don't know. He was so drunk he couldn't remember anything. Didn't know where he'd been or with whom.
Hmm.
Oh, Phil, it was terrible.
Well, if this was last Saturday, why are you so worried? Anything had happened, surely by now you'd have heard.
Yes, but something did happen, Phil.
Oh?
This morning I got a phone call from a man who meant business, believe me. Mm-hmm. I made notes on a memo pad while he talked so I wouldn't forget any of it. Here, got that bag here. Here, read it.
No. This is Fish. Fish?
Yes, Fish.
Tell Maynard 50 G's. Important. Money by tomorrow or trouble.
Then he hung up on me, Phil.
Fish? Did you and Maynard ever hear of him before?
Well, I certainly didn't, and when I asked Maynard, he didn't know him either. Hmm. He had a cold, heavy voice, and spoke with a thick lisp.
You want me to peg this Fish for you?
Yes, so I'll know why Maynard owes that much money.
Well, now, look, baby, I'm bedridden. I'm stuck. I can't even move.
I know that. I know that, Phil. But you have the phone here, a lot of contacts, and plenty of diplomacy. If this is something I can get Maynard out of by paying that money, then I'll pay.
Okay, baby, I'll try. But look, if it's outside the law,
you'll turn Maynard in. Yes, yes, I'm aware of that.
All right, where do I start? Where did he start Saturday?
At the Colony Club with a female named Faye Altman. Well, whatever happened must have begun there. That's why I thought of you, Phil. You know the Colony Club.
Well, I know their Scotch's Johnny Walker, and Sid Rayfield's the owner, that's all.
Well, that may be enough. Will you want to talk to Maynard?
Yeah, yeah. Send him over in about an hour, will you?
Yes, he'll be here. And that Altman girl's number is Sunset, 0144.
0144.
Yes.
Okay, Ordine, I'll get him. At least my dial finger isn't... No, just a minute. Hello?
This is Fish, Marlowe.
What?
Fish. I know my pigeon's with you now. I followed her. Don't clip her wings, pal. Back out now while you still can. I'm warning you.
Phil, who was that? You look upset.
Yeah, well, my my horse just ran forth. Look, you better run along now, Ordine.
Well, okay, Phil.
And stay out of dark corners, huh? In spite of my sitting duck position, I told myself that a private detective who listens to warnings today is out of business tomorrow. So I put in a call for Sid Rayfield at the Colony Club. Sid was out, so I left a message for him to get in touch with me. Next, I tried Faye Altman, but the Sunset number went unanswered. After that, I started checking for the next best thing to legs I could think of. A guy named Hunger Malloy. By profession, a roving bookie. By appearance, a slouch and threadbare hound's tooth propped against any convenient lamppost. Hunger, by some peculiar instinct, either knew or could find out about anything, especially slightly illegal. And because I'd once pried him out of a tight spot, he loved me like a brother. I finally located him in a pool hall on Melrose and told him what I needed to know. He promised it was as good as done and was off to the Colony Club and I would hear from him. Well, that left me with nothing to do but scratch my cast again, worry about my gun being in the desk drawer in my office, think about Fish, and wait. Things went like that for 45 minutes and then... Come in. Who is it? Who's there?
Why, it's me, Hunger.
Oh.
What's the matter, Philip? You're jumpy.
Yeah, I'm real glad to see you, fella.
Likewise. How you feeling under the weather, huh?
Yeah.
How's it been?
No, it's bothering me a little.
Look, I brought you some flowers.
Oh, Hunger, you shouldn't have.
I know. I tried to get long stems, but them plants in the park ain't doing so good this year. Hey, listen... Are you sure you gave me the right dope on the phone, Philip?
Sure, sure, I'm sure. Why? What'd you find out?
Oh, that's just it. Nothing. I went to the Colony Club and got talking around, but not one thing worth noticing went on there Saturday night.
Well, maybe it started there and moved out, huh?
Yeah, I tried that. Some of the customers went out to the valley after to shoot a little dice. Another bunch moved down to that big joint on Adams for some poker. That's all.
Gambling, huh? Could be a gambling setup. Were they big games?
No, just the usual. Nothing extra at all.
Oh.
And especially, I couldn't pin down a thing on any 50 G's changing hands.
Are you positive, Hunger?
Well, you don't ask too many questions in that league, Philip, but I'm pretty sure nobody got rich or I'd have heard, you know?
Oh.
I got a hint, at least.
Yeah, well, look, what about this guy named Fish?
Blank. Some new faces in town, but no high rollers answering to Fish.
And a background on Faye Altman?
Yeah, some. Pick and shovel queen, in a nice way.
Uh-huh.
Been digging nuggets here and there for a year or so. The latest is the Gill-edged punk you want to know about, Maynard Patterson.
Uh-huh.
Say, can I have one of these?
Yeah, go ahead. Feed your face.
Incidentally, they was among those present at the colony Saturday night, if that means something to you. And that's about it, Philip.
Okay, Hunger, thanks a million.
I'm sorry I couldn't be more help, but I think you're getting a bum pitch.
Oh, well.
You're fat. Visitors. Hey, I got a back way out of here. It won't look so good.
Sure. Bedroom, Hunger. You can go out the window and down the fire escape. Hey, wait a minute. Is that a new shirt?
No, I come into a bit of clink, so I had it washed. I hope you're feeling better, Philip. I'll see
you. Yeah, thanks. Oh, come in.
Ordine, my sister said you wanted to see me, Mr. Marlowe. Sorry about your leg.
I'm sorry about it, too. I can't get comfortable. Hey, I hear you really tied one on the other night, huh, kid?
Yeah, but I'm through, Mr. Marlowe. I swear it.
Yeah, sure. Sit down.
Oh, thanks.
What about the gambling? Lose your head over that, too?
Yeah, I guess I do. As far as my allowance goes, anyway.
Now, look, I want you to tell me all you remember about Saturday night.
Well, I went to the Colony Club with Faye. That's my girl, Faye Altman.
By the way, how do you rate stuff like Faye on your allowance?
Just a minute.
Skip it. Go ahead.
Well, I was drinking quite a bit, and by 1 o'clock, I guess I was pretty fuzzy. I lost Faye someplace. Then I went outside for some air, and from there on, it's just a blank.
Well, now, look, if you didn't pass out cold, you're bound to have some flashes you can remember. I want it all.
Well, I do remember a couple of things, Mr. Marlowe.
Oh?
They're more like a dream than anything else. I seem to remember a big, old-fashioned house. It was dark and gloomy with high ceilings and old, ornate brass chandeliers. I don't know how I got there or what I was doing.
Were you alone?
Well, I don't think so. I've got a man's face in my mind, a flabby guy in a silk shirt. He had big hands, freckles on the backs of him, mm-hmm. with kind of a reddish hair on him. I remember them against something green.
Did he lisp?
I can't seem to remember.
Mm.
Just thinking about him gives me the willies, but I don't know why. I can't figure out why. I talked to Faye. She waited for me until the colony closed, and then she went home. She was pretty mad about it.
You sure that's all you can remember?
Yep. And it's everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, does it make any sense at all?
Not much. Sounds like you could have been mixed up in a poker game at a green top table in an old dump on Adams. Lost your shirt to a fat guy named Fish.
You think that's all there is to it, huh?
Well, not quite all. There's the little matter of 50,000 bucks you owe him.
50,000? Look, Mr. Marlowe, if you and Ordine get me out of this mess, I swear I'll straighten up. I'll never get into trouble again, honest.
Sonny boy, what you do later is your sister's headache, strictly. I got trouble enough lining things up so you can get off the hook. Now go on home and stay there till I call you.
Okay. Mr. Marlowe, I know you don't like me, but... Well, thanks anyhow.
50,000 bucks.
Oh...
Yeah, sunset 01 4 4. I have to put cast on so tight.
Hello?
Faye, my name is Phil Marlowe. I've been trying to reach you for 2 hours.
Well, maybe you need longer arms, Mr. Marlowe.
No, just some conversation about Maynard Patterson. I'm in my apartment number 210, Grenard Arms on Franklin. Can you come over?
Why would I want to talk about Maynard to you in the first place? And why don't you come over here in the second?
Well, in the first place, I'm a private detective. In the second, I got a busted leg. How about it? It's important.
Well, I've never dated a private detective with a broken leg before. It sounds entrancing. I'm around the corner on Bronson. I'll be right there.
Good. I'll... Goodbye, Faye. Come on in. Well. Sid Rayfield in person yet?
Yeah. The boys at the club told me about your urgent call, peepers, so I came right out.
Well, if I'd known you were coming, I'd have baked a snake, Sid.
Skip the cracks. I know what you want.
Well, then you're clairvoyant. Because I'm not sure myself yet.
Try this. You're working for Ordine Patterson like you did once before because that punk brother of hers is in a bad jam with one Mr. Fish. Well?
Yeah, it's quite neat. You happen to know the guy?
Yeah, Marlowe, I happen to know the guy. That's why I'm here. To tip you because you're a friend of mine, more or less. So I say leave it alone, Marlowe. Get out of it. Stay out. It's none of your business.
You know, you talk like a man with a personal angle.
What? Why, I ought to split your lip for that. I come here to do your turn
and you... Take it easy. Mind your bedside manners, Sid. I'm an invalid.
You'll be worse than that if you don't back out of this. I'm telling you, this guy Fish is too hot to handle, Marlowe, and you better... Who's that?
How should I know? For a sick room, this joint's becoming more like Hollywood and Vine by the minute.
I took a long chance coming here. I got to get out without being seen.
Well, try the bedroom window and fire escape. Everybody else does.
Don't let them in till I'm gone. You hear? It ain't healthy.
Marlo!
Sid! Sid, what is it?
Marlo, I'm hit!
Sid!
A lousy, silent circle!
Oh, this stinking leg. Nice going, Mr. Fish. I suppose that makes me...
Mr. Marlowe, it's Mitzi from the restaurant. Are you all right, Mr. Marlowe?
Yeah, Mitzi, I'm okay, I'm fine.
Well, I thought you was talking to somebody.
No, I was reading. I didn't hear the buzzer.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. Sometimes I get real carried away myself.
That's fine.
Look, I fixed up your dinner, everything just like you ordered. Here, I'll drag the...
No, Mitzi, I don't think I'll eat right now. Just put the tray down and beat it, huh? Like a good girl?
Yeah, but what about the dishes?
Get them in the morning, will you? Get out of here, will you? Go on.
Oh, gee, we're okay. Good night, Mr. Marlowe.
Okay, Fish, the girl's gone. Well, come on in. Did you hear me? I said come on in. I guess I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
So who has a deeper voice, Gerald Moore or me?
I'd say you guys are pretty much almost the same. I can't even tell you apart. You're so similar.
Well, if they ever do a reenactment of Philip Marlowe.
For sure.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison, or an early grave, and they never learn. That's what he says at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like him.
Sounds just like him.
It's hard to tell you apart.
I think it's exactly like him.
Are you guys talking about deep voices?
No, okay. We were not.
I was just checking.
Okay.
No, Pee Wee Herman.
Sorry.
That is the first portion of The Bedside Manor, starring Gerald Moore from May 30th, 1950. We'll have more of it in Gerald Moore. We'll have more of it.
Oh, that's good, Carl.
You like that?
Funny.
Roger? Gerald Moore, we'll have more of it? No. He doesn't really.
A little less
doesn't
is more.
Appreciate
a little less
it.
Is more.
We'll be right back. Crime is a sucker's road. Those who travel it wind up in the something, the gutter, the prison, or an early grave. They never learn.
You just said that right before the promo there.
Just in case anyone missed it.
In case you missed it, we'll do it again.
I wouldn't want any of our listeners to miss that. All right, we're going to get back to Philip Marlowe.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Don't forget, send in your photo of your kitty cat because you could win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. It's such a generous thing that our sponsor, Cat's Pride, Dan Jaffe, the CEO, that he does every single month. He comes in here and chooses a winner to win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. Very generous.
And next Sunday is the last Sunday of the month. That'll be a week from today.
That's right. So there you go, folks.
Do
if you
right
want to win, you got to send in a picture of your kitty cat. Just take a photo of your cat. Email it to us at catspridephoto@gmail.com. That's catspridephoto@gmail.com. And you may be the lucky winner of a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter. Yeah?
Yeah, one week to do it. Do it right away.
Yes, indeed. All right, let's tune in to the conclusion now of The Bedside Manor on the adventures of Philip Marlowe.
Now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe, and tonight's story, The Bedside Manners.
Man is never ready to die, really. Sometimes saying you are helps. Sometimes, like when you're flat on your back waiting for a killer with a silencer, you might step into view through your bedroom door. I kept on waiting. For 60 seconds, each as long as a fall down an empty well. Once I thought I heard the window close. At least another 5 minutes went by. Then I actually began to believe that for some reason Fish had gone away. And that made the scoreboard real easy to read. Sid Rayfield, a guy who knew his way around, had been killed. And I hadn't been able to do a thing about it. It was time for a call to homicide. But even as I reached for the phone, it went off. Hello? I said hello.
This is your last warning, Marlo.
Oh, you got to a phone fast, Buster. What's on your slippery mind, fish?
Something you'd be smart to pay attention to. You see, Molly, you're only still alive because it's convenient to me.
Too bad you didn't feel that way about Sid Rayfield.
Rayfield got what he deserved, and so will you. Like I said, you're only still alive because it's convenient to me. You happen to be working for the lady who holds the purse strings.
Go on.
Therefore, there's very little more, Marlo, except this. Maynard Patterson's a lousy poker player. On Saturday night, he dropped $50,000 to me. $50,000 in two markets, Marlo. One for $2,000, the other for $48,000. I want both paid promptly, understand?
Not quite. Maynard Patterson doesn't remember what happened Saturday night.
So
maybe you know all about it and you're making this up as you go along.
No, Marlo, that's not the case. And if you drag yourself to the windowsill in your bedroom, you'll find all the proof you need.
What do you mean?
That I left one of the markers there in a white envelope. The one for $2,000. Ernest and the poor little rich boy's own handwriting. I left it there so you'd know I'm not kidding about the $48,000. I'll be in touch. So long, Marlo.
Why, you're all a lousy double crook. Come in.
Why not? How could a girl ever resist the welcome in your voice? I'm Faye Altman, private detective.
That figures.
What happened to you? Fall out of a transom or trip over a clue? Which?
Neither. It was a wisecrack, honey. I laughed so hard I fell down and broke my leg.
Let's get down to business, huh?
Yeah. For a starter, Faye, what's your connection with Maynard Patterson? How tight is the knot?
Huh? What was that again?
I said you and Maynard. Just how chummy are you two?
I thought I heard you right. You know, private detective, I don't like being pushed around.
Faye, there's a dead man in the bedroom.
Dead man? Did you say a dead man?
Sid Rayfield. He was murdered, Faye.
Oh, no. Oh, not Sid. Gee, he was a nice guy, Marlo. Sharp, but nice.
Faye, I want you to go in there and look for an envelope on the windowsill.
An envelope? No, I don't think I want
to... It's important, Faye. I can't get out of this bed. Now, go on. It may help us tag Sid's killer.
But... Well, all right. I'll get it. You say it's near the window. Oh!
Keep going, Kay. At the windowsill. Do you see it?
Yeah, I've got it. Here.
Oh.
Hey, the window's broken in there. Do you know it?
Yeah, yeah. Now, Faye, my question about you and Maynard, somehow or other, it may count. Are you in love with him?
No. I mean, I like him all right. He's a good time, nice places, nice people, nice little presents, but...
no yachts.
No, that's right. No yachts. And I like yachts, Private Detective. They beat rowing around in MacArthur Park, I know. I've tried them both. Anything else?
Yeah, turn it around. How does he feel about you?
Overboard, I guess. Look, you said that this might help catch Sid's killer. I like Sid, so I'd like to see that happen. But make this question a good one, because it's your last.
Fair enough. Maynard loves you, you love money. Maynard didn't have any. Now the question. Did he have any plan to change all that?
Just one. He was saving up every cent he could squeeze out of that stingy sister of his for a stake in a big card game. He was going to run it into big dough. Any help, Private Detective?
Yeah, if you call checking other people's stories out, a help.
Which translates into what?
Maynard did just that. Only he lost it all Saturday night. Lost his stake and $50,000 more.
What? He owes that much dough?
Yeah, yeah. Now tell me, have you heard from Maynard since?
You had your last question, Private Detective, remember? Good night, Marlo. It's been a big, fat pleasure.
I'll bet. Anyhow, Faye, my best to the fish.
Your very best to the fish?
Yeah.
I don't get it. What fish?
Never mind. Goodbye, baby, and don't slam the door. The lady was gone. It was time to call the police. But I was dying hard, and even as I dialed the number, I turned the envelope that had been left on the windowsill over in one hand. The envelope was the cheap kind you find in any dime store with nothing written on it. And the note itself, which read, I owe the bearer $2,000 payable within 24 hours, was signed Maynard Patterson and dated Saturday. It was on a square piece of memo paper, and it made me think about a little item which for quite a while had been sitting last row, last seat in the back of my mind.
Hello?
But trying real hard to be a star pupil. Now, Marlo, the fishing may be great. Oh, this leg. Come on, baby, be home.
Hello?
Mrs. Marlo, Ordean.
Oh, Phil, what have you found out?
I'm not sure, but among other things, I may have caught a killer. Now, listen, do you still have that note? You know, the one you brought over here, the memo you made after fish call? Have you got it?
Why, yes, it's in my handbag.
But never mind the question, just get it, will you?
All right, I'll only be a moment.
I'll hang on.
You better just hang up, Marlo.
I wasn't expecting you just yet, Maynard.
No. Nor this gun, I'm sure. Hang up.
It'll only make a call back, you know.
Yeah. And won't my dear sister be exasperated when she keeps getting a busy signal? No matter how long she dials, only a busy signal.
The pronunciation is signal, Maynard. Huh? Or do I call you fish and don't look so surprised your act stank? People who can't pronounce the letter S avoid it instead of going out of their way to use it as in Perthtring.
My mistake, Milo.
Yeah, among a lot of others. You never should have been careless about the kind of paper you wrote the IOU on. Your sister, who you're trying to swindle, came in here earlier with the same juttings on a piece of paper that's got the same top edge. Irregular. Because
yeah,
no doubt...
I know. Because it was ripped off the same telephone pad. And I wouldn't have used that paper since IOUs are customarily written during or immediately after a card game. And I couldn't have been at home at the time of the game. All right, stop it, Marlo. There's no need for any more hypotheses.
No, you can fill in all the blanks, can't you? Step by step, a rotten, tailor-made scheme to get your sister to save you by paying $50,000 to a gambler named Fish who doesn't exist.
I said stop it.
Slimy setup that began with a fake one-night stand of bottle and bond amnesia. Moved on to an also fake telephone call to Ordine from a heavy named Fish. A man with a list.
Shut up, Marlo.
And the payoff, the confession call to me also.
Oh! Yes, Mr. Marlo, everything you say is so. But I'm still not beaten, and I won't be. You're the only one who knows all this. And even as Fish killed Sid Raphael, Fish is going to kill you. Fish, Marlo, not me. Fish, the ruthless gambler who never will be caught, but who my sister will pay, nevertheless. Is that clear, Marlo?
Not quite. Why did you kill Raphael? He had me convinced that Fish actually existed.
Which is the reason he died. He was playing my game, Marlo, but not for me. Somehow or other, he found out what I was doing. Maybe because he always checked carefully when anybody got too interested in Fay Altman. And he decided to help things along, then cut himself in. Well, you know the answer to that. Now, if you don't mind, turn on the radio, Marlo.
Why? Silencer doesn't...
Turn it on. Louder. I wouldn't want anything to go wrong now, Marlo. I've been so lucky. Lucky that I got away from my sister and was free to watch this building, this apartment. Lucky so that I could see who came and who went and act accordingly. Yeah, I've been lucky, all right. You do grant me that, don't you, Marlo?
Yeah, sure. You've been lucky. Yeah, you've been real lucky, Patterson, up to now. But you know how it is with luck, kid? One minute you have it, the next minute it runs out. Look, do you mind if I turn this off? It's putting me to sleep.
You are brave, aren't you, Marlo?
No. Just lucky. Lucky that someone's standing behind you.
Who? The mounted police?
No. Just a guy. A guy named Hunger Malloy. It's a funny kind of a guy, Maynard. He was here earlier tonight, and he ducked out by way of the bedroom. At least, I thought he ducked out.
Oh, quit it, Marlo.
Huh?
Now, don't budge an inch. I'm not going to turn around and give you the chance to go for that gun, which is probably under your pillow. Oh, no.
Oh, but, Maynard, you should do something. You're about to be hitting a noggin, honest, Maynard, with a vase.
That, Marlo, I'll believe when it happens.
He just wouldn't take your word, would he, Philip? Well, that's the way it goes. I'll see you.
Now, wait a minute, Hunger. Come back here.
I can't, pal. You got a corpse in there. That means cops. Them and me don't mix.
Don't worry about it. Just tell me before I bust. You started for the window 20 minutes ago. What happened? What happened, Hunger?
I got delayed. After that, stuff was popping. This louse was in there, then the corpse delecti, and then the louse again at the window, leaving an envelope, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, but the delay, Hunger. Before company started coming, what was it? Well?
The truth, Philip?
Yeah, try it. It may not hurt at all.
Okay. They was on your dresser. The jazziest pair of pearl cufflinks, Philip, I seen since I used to deal in Vegas. I was attracted.
Hunger, as a last favor to a guy you've already done a big favor for, take them. The cufflinks. Go ahead, kid.
All right, Philip. As long as you put it so nice, I will. Now, like I was saying... Good night, Philip.
Wait a minute, Hunger. The cufflinks. Take them with you now.
Of course. That's exactly what I'm doing, Philip. See you around.
Funny little guy. Funny name. Hunger Malloy. You know, it's a strange thing. But a broken leg makes the old wheels go round. Well, that figures. Makes you think about breaks. And that brings me back to Hunger Malloy again. The only break he ever got was in his skull. Somebody once said we make our own breaks. I don't know about that. I didn't break my leg. Or maybe I did. Did I really look where I was going? And Maynard Patterson. Look at all the breaks he had. Loads of dough. Still, he didn't know where he was going either. And Sid Rayfield. I wonder if when the slug hit him, he thought, what a lousy break.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and are written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in our cast were Ann Stone, David Ellis, Vivi Janis, Wilms Herbert, Paul Dubov, and Frank Gerstle. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Orant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time it was strictly out of whack. From a perfect hostess, who was rude to her guests, past a big red fence that ran all the way from L.A. to Palm Springs, to a second-story man stabbed to death in a basement apartment.
This is Roy Rowan speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
There is The Adventures of Philip Marlowe from May 30th, 1950, with The Bedside Manner, starring Gerald Moore as Raymond Chandler's tough private eye. You also heard Paul Dubov in that episode. And Vivi Janis and Wilms Herbert, as heard on CBS. There was no sponsor. For some reason, for most of the Philip Marlowe run, and it was on the air for a few years, it never had a sponsor. I mean, it had one here and there, but for the most part, it was always sustained by the network, which is weird because the Whistler, Escape was the same way. Escape was a top show. And it almost never had a sponsor. It's really odd because you hear lesser shows than Philip Marlowe. I mean, Philip Marlowe was an A-list that had a whole orchestra. You hear that's not an organ. That was an orchestra. And great actors, the top actors in the field, the best writers on the show, no sponsor.
So what do you think?
I have no idea because, you know, it had great ratings. Great ratings. Escape had great ratings as well.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those unknown things. I mean, I don't think anybody really knows the answer as to why a show as good as this and as good as Escape never had a sponsor. You know, The Mysterious Traveler was another series. It was on the air for about 10 years on the radio. And I think in that time, here and there, a couple of weeks, they had a sponsor here or there. And that was on the Mutual Radio Network.
Right.
Never had a sponsor. I mean, I shouldn't say never, but
rarely,
90% of the run, it did not have a sponsor. And most of these shows, as we listen to, have, I mean, you know, My Favorite Husband had Jell-O. Gunsmoke had different sponsors here and there. For a while, I think Chesterfield, you know, was a big sponsor of Gunsmoke. But Philip Marlowe? I have no idea. I don't know why Mysterious Traveler or Escape did not have a sponsor. And what happens then, you know, is the network itself has to pay for that show.
Right.
So they have to take the full brunt of paying all the actors and the whole program, all the producers, all the directors, and it's sort of a drain on the network. You need the sponsor. That's why we love our sponsors.
We do.
We love Cat's Pride from day one has been our sponsor. So, folks, do them a solid, and if you have a kitty cat, switch over to Cat's Pride because they've been our sponsor day one. Woodman's and so many of these other great sponsors that we have, Prevagen, and we love you. And that's, I mean, sponsors are the lifeblood of the show.
Right, and all the products that we give away every hour for our contests.
Yeah,
again.
And it's a big help when you join the Classic Radio Club because that helps fund the show as well. The Classic Radio Club, if you're a member, we appreciate you sincerely. Go to ClassicRadioClub.com. Join for the first month for only $1. So check it out, ClassicRadioClub.com.